Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I have to welcome to the Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, the Director General, and all the officials in attendance. I'm told we have representatives of the Independent Development Trust officials, the Construction Industry Development Board, AGRIMA South Africa, and the Council for Built Environment. Those that we might not have mentioned were in the room in their respective designations. You are also welcome. Before I hand over to our Honorable Minister for his introductory remarks, I would like to make very brief treasury remarks. On the day that I was elected as the chairperson of this particular portfolio committee, that was also obviously done by the multi-party collective. And my remarks on the day was that there's one issue that we bear common responsibility for. And I said to them that the open secret in public is that the reputation of public works, wherever you go, is not a good reputation. And I made mention to them that some people in saying congratulations on your election as chairperson also said our deepest sympathies. Now what I said to members of parliament on that day is that it's our collective responsibility during our tenure, whilst we have the privilege of serving on the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, it's our collective responsibility with the department, with the ministry, to ensure that we do change the reputation of public works, to do what we need to do without fear or favor. That's the responsibility that is. On that day, I also mentioned to colleagues that about 10 years ago or so, I was also the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. And at our beginning of our responsibility there, Home Affairs was commonly known as Horror Affairs. It didn't have the good reputation that it does have now. But we were able to turn around Home Affairs, working in conjunction, Portfolio Committee, the Department and the Ministry, oversight throughout the country, visiting offices unannounced. And in that manner, we were able to turn around the department. A number of officials were arrested. But what we also assured was that those arrests didn't take place at home, but at the places where people worked. Those who were involved in corruption had to bear the brunt of that. And slowly but surely, the department was turned around. Today, when people speak about Home Affairs, there's an image of excellence. But facts are facts, and facts are some things. It has not always been that. People at all levels had to work in concert in order to turn around the reputation of the Department of Home Affairs from Horror Affairs to what it is today. So I am similarly optimistic that with a collective of people in this room, if we all work together, we can, and it's our responsibility and challenge to turn around the current reputation that the Department of Public Works has. It's not a good reputation. So it's our responsibility to ensure that in the next couple of years, we do ensure that when people refer to public works, they think of excellence. It's a department that each and everyone would like to be associated with. But the fact of the matter, that's not the current situation. Good folks, those are my cursory remarks. Honorable Minister, welcome to your opportunity for your remarks before you hand over to Director General, Department, or perhaps the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, the DG and Senior Management of the Department, the Chairs and CEOs of the entities, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for in a particular auspicious occasion as we meet for the first time. The Department of Public Works and the new honourable members of the of this portfolio committee. Allow me, Chairperson, to welcome the leader of the opposition party, Honourable Mubo. I can see that he's following me, because when I was in international relations, he was also going with me. Now he's coming here. Let me also say, Honourable Chair, I value these engagements in the portfolio committee, and I take very seriously my duty to account to the people's representatives in Parliament. This, after all, is the very heart of our democratic process. The elected MPs overseeing in detail the activities of the officials and holding the executive to account. And I speak for the DM and the DG when I say you have our full support in the important work that you do. So the DGA's team will provide the detailed presentation on the threat plan and the APP. But in the time available, I want us to provide a strategic overview of where we are as a department in two parts. To map out at a high level our vision and priorities for the next 5 years of this new administration, and also to provide provide you with a progress report on the turnaround strategy for the Department of Public Works. Mindful that we'll only succeed in the goals that we set ourselves if we improve the performance of the department. And as you have indicated, Chairperson, let me just start briefly with the turnaround, which is the rebuilding of public works or the Department of Public Works. In 2012, we developed a 7-year plan to rebuild the Department of Public Works. This was done with the support and the expertise of National Treasury. The plan envisages 3 phases. Phase 1 is the stabilization. Phase 2, efficiency enhancement, and phase 3, sustainable development. In phase 1, the stabilization phase was necessitated by the poor performance by DPW and lack of the adequate management and financial controls, culminating in 8 years of adverse audit findings, as well as high levels of fraud and corruption evidence in the reports of the public protector at the SIU. We are 2 years into the 7-year plan, and we stabilize the core business areas. That is the leases, the immovable asset register, and the finances. On the leases with the National Treasury, we've conducted a 100% audit of all leasing property and introduced more robust systems to manage the leasing portfolio. The exercise also helped us to identify areas of possible collusion for forensic investigation. On the immovable asset register, simply put, for the first time in the history of South African state, public works has now produced what we can say is not 100%, but a reliable register of state properties. The National Public Works accounts for 107,000 properties. and on some 30,000 land, and some 30,000 land parcels. 95% of these assets have been physically verified. We say this is a game changer. We now have a much better idea of what we have, and we can start to use this massive property portfolio to leverage economic development and job creation. On the clean audit project, the DG and CFO tell me we can expect a much improved audit outcome for 2013-14. It has been a huge task to impose proper controls on the finances of the department. For example, in relation to irregular expenditure, the team has had to go back as far as 2009 to review some 1.5 million transactions. There are no shortcuts to good governance and compliance. So a word of caution, we were able to stabilize the department by insourcing skills that we had, and the priority now is to consolidate work of the realization phase, ensuring that skills are transferred and we build the capacity in-house. On phase two, which is efficiency enhancement, this is where we seek to improve the business model and the processes of the department. This will be the focus of the next 5 years. Critically, this involves the following: operationalizing a structure which aligns with the mandate of the department, principally operationalizing of the property management state entity in line with the earlier cabinet decisions to ring-fence and professionalize the property business. We're also operationalizing of the government risk and compliance branch to drive compliance and anti-fraud and corruption campaigns. So it's advocacy, investigations, and hearings. So this branch, which we call the GRC branch, will also drive the proper process of strategic planning, incorporating risk management, performance management, and process re-engineering. The objective here is to develop a new service delivery model in line with the Department of Public Service and Administration requirements, which is based on the needs of the client departments and enhancing the performance of the department. In a construction project management environment, lack of planning has led to underspending on the budget and cost overruns and delays on individual projects. This is being addressed through the greater coordination between the branches and units along the construction value chain, and the introduction of proper planning methodologies in the form of the Infrastructure Delivery Management System, the IDMS, and training of officials with the assistance of National Treasury. The department is also developing an information communication technology ICT plan to be implemented as part of the second phase of the turnaround. So in modern era, the so-called information age, an appropriate and a robust IT platform is essential to the success and the very survival of the business we're involved in. Phase three, which we call the sustainable development, this is where we fundamentally review the mandate, the purpose, and responsibilities of public works in the different spheres of government. This will involve a process of research and consultation with stakeholders, culminating in a public works act. We don't have a proper legislation governing this particular department. There's no act. So we pick up the pieces of legislation from anywhere and so on, and then we have a mandate. But let me summarize where we are in the turnaround briefly. As a matter of agents, to consolidate the stabilization work, as the main focus of the next 5 years, we seek to enhance the efficiency of our current business operations, employing better planning, performance management, the ICT solutions and our tools, and simultaneously we are embarking upon the fundamental policy review culminating into what I call the Public Works Act, to refresh and clarify our mandate and to establish a platform for sustainable development. Let me just spend the last 5 minutes on what I would call, before I hand to the DG, strategic vision for 2014-19. Very recently, I announced to the top management of the department my 5-year policy statement and vision for the Department of Public Works. Just allow me to quote the summary of the 5 key priority areas. 1, the creation of the 6 million work opportunities for the poor and unemployed people. through the labor-intensive delivery of the public services and infrastructure. The public employment programs must facilitate community participation and provide tangible benefits to the community, the society, and the economy. This is a commitment to the people of South Africa, which I take very seriously. We are expanding the EPWP both quantitatively and qualitatively. Yes, we provide a stipend to the unemployed people, but the programs they deliver much more to individual participants and to their communities. This program is receiving a full attention of the Deputy Minister, who can give further details on this particular matter. And this has also been elevated to be the public employment program at the level of the President and one of the key commissions involving a number of the departments. The second is the second priority area, operationalization of the property management trade entity and the transformation of the core property business, including the construction management. This study includes a program to rebuild the technical and the professional capacity in the department, which was allowed to go some time back when people argued that let's concentrate on the core business. The non-core business must be privatized. That's how the skills left the particular department. So this is the core business of public works, the custodianship of the state immovable assets, and the provision of the accommodation to government. And that accounts for almost 75% of the budget. Three, the operationalization of the governance and the risk and compliance branch to drive the anti-corruption and steer it, the second phase of the turnaround, efficiency enhancement, using the tools of planning, service delivery model, improvement, plan processes, and performance management. This also means working with the HR and change management to promote committed performance-driven work culture. Because I think we must not undermine the issue of the work culture in the public service today. We have to deal with it and we have to confront those issues. So the portfolio committee has rightly demanded greater accountability from the Department of Public Works. That is our objective here, to translate plans and targets into individual performance agreements to be cascaded down from the top. Fourthly, the fourth priority area in consultation with all stakeholders, particularly the wider public works family in the provinces, a policy review culminating into the act I've been talking about. This will provide a solid foundation for the third phase of the turnaround, that sustainable development, and will clarify and refresh the mandate of the department. The fifth area, in partnership with our entities, the charter councils, the relevant stakeholders, a renewed and a sustained program of action to transform the built environment, the construction and the property sectors as part of the second more radical phase of our transition to democracy. This must include support for black and female constructors and contractors and property practitioners, as well as the production of the black professionals and artisans in the built environment disciplines. We cannot be complacent that only 25% of the built environment professionals are black. It's a matter we have to confront as different departments, not just as public works. Higher education, economic development, water and sanitation, because that's where you need all the technical skills. This is the strategic vision chapter for the next 5 years. And the DG now will present then the programs and specific targets. Maybe let me pause there. Thank you, Chair.
Minister, thank you very much. I think that it might be propitious at this stage to just do a general round of introductions. We have seen the names of a number of officials, so if we could kindly just do a quick round, say what's your responsibility, and perhaps let's start with the members of Parliament. You might know them, you might not know the new members, so this is an opportunity for all of us to know each other. Members of Parliament, if you could kindly also just give us your political party so that people in the room know who's present with us.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, and as we say, all protocol observed. My name is Freddy Adams. I'm from the African National Congress.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister of Public Works. My name is Patricia Evans, and I'm from the Northern Cape, and I'm deployed to the National Assembly by the ANC.
Today you omitted to say that you are not married to the other
Adam. We share the same surname.
My name is Dominique Antoma, deployed by African National Police from KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning. My name is Kenneth Zimu. I'm a member of the Democratic Alliance. I'm from Pretoria, Gauteng, Tshwane, to be specific.
Morning. My name is James Masango from the Democratic Alliance from Sekunda Mpumalanga.
Morning. My name is Ketonga Balotsole from the Black African Party from Gauteng.
My name is the Natural Zima Chapter, commonly known as Mahu, deployed by the African National Congress from the
center. Thank you. My name is Primrose Sonti from Northwest and played here as the ESF.
Good morning. I'm the Staff of Parliament from Hansard. Here we help with the translation, particularly of the course in English. Thank you.
Morning, honorable chairperson and members. My name is Lord Madam, Public Works Monitor Evaluation.
Okay. Good morning, honorable chairperson and members. My name is Yake Quinan, Head of Finance, Property Management Trading Entity, Public Works.
Good morning, honorable chairperson, honorable members. My name is Abusha Matute. I'm Deputy Director General, Regional Coordination, Public Works.
Morning, Honorable Chiefs and Honorable Members. My name is Mandla Mabuza. I'm the Deputy Director General, Key Accounts Management. Thanks.
Good morning, Imtiaz Faisal, Deputy Director General, Governance, Risk and Compliance.
Good morning, I'm Mickey Naika from Strategic Planning.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Members. I'm Cox Mukoro. I am the Chief Finance Officer for Public Works.
The way you said knock so fast, it sounded like ox.
It's quite an ox. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Mzuwonge Hlandu. I'm the Director General of the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, Chair and colleagues. Jeremy Cronin, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, my name is Clive Nkisa, Deputy Director General, Corporate Services.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable members. My name is Stan Henderson, Deputy Director for the Expanded Public Works Program.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable members. My name is Philip Marcelo. I'm the Legal Advisor to Minister.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is George Mudumela from the Office of the Minister.
Chair, honorable members, I'm Samuel O'Malley from the Office of the Minister.
Just a second, when you say your name and you say you are from the Office of the Minister, it means nothing. What do you do in the Office of the Minister?
Thanks, Chair. I'm the Chief of Staff.
I'm the Medializing Officer, Chair.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mandisa Faitjana Lindi. I'm the Acting Deputy Police. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Peter Chiapasco, currently acting as Deputy Director General of Asset Investment Management. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I am Tassa Subban, DDG Inner City Regeneration.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Melika Adime from Key Account Management.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Nkosi Vilakazi, Acting Deputy Director General, Projects and Professional Services.
Good morning, Chairperson. Honorable members, my name is Obed Moluzi, Chief Director, Professional Services. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, my name is Lydia Pitu. I'm responsible for special projects for the Minister.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Fred Manson. I'm the Regional Manager in the Western Cape for the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Linda Lwamiyakaza and I'm the incoming chairperson of the CIDP board. Chair and honorable members would like to apologize for coming late. We got lost and we've been walking around Parliament. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joe Odhiambo. I'm the CEO of Agrima South Africa. Thank you.
Honorable chairperson and honorable members, my name is Zandile Sokupa. I'm the CEO for CID.
Good morning, Chairperson and the honorable members. I'm Rolani Mhlanga, the interim CFO of CBE. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Kukuma Zubuwa. I'm from the CBE.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Dr. Stan Lebebe. I'm the acting CEO of the IDT.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Ayanda Wakaba, the COO of the Independent Development Trust.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Adam Tombini. I'm the Chief Director for Intergovernmental Relations Public Works.
Honorable Chair and members, good morning. My name is Chris Giane. I'm also the incoming Deputy Chair of the CIDP.
Good morning, Chair and all members. My name is Abdul Mugri Peterson. I'm from PMG.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Gay Davis. I'm Eyewitness News 702.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Sally Jasmine. I'm the Executive Secretary to the Chairperson.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Mpoma Shaba. I am the Parliamentary Liaison Office for the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, everyone. I am Shoaib Dinesian, Content Advisor to the Committee.
Good morning. It is Stephanie, Researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Public Works.
Good morning. Akon Sakwe, the Committee Secretary.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Masuto Zibeko. I'm a committee assistant. Thank you.
I'm not going to lie to you good folks and say that I remember all your names. I'm very grateful that I still remember my own. I would kindly like to table two apologies. Honorable Sitani has informed us of arrival at 10:30 a.m. We have another apology, Member of Parliament, Matere. She has a domestic problem, her house burnt down. So she can't be with us this morning. She's busy sorting out that. Those are the only apologies that we've received. Thank you. You had your love.
Actually, I just wanted to say, I'm equally lost as to who is who, but I would appreciate it for committee if they can provide us with the details of the honourable officials from departments, so that some of us are new in this committee and we have no clue of who's where, and so would appreciate that, Chair.
Yes,
thank you, Chair. I have asked to be a student of at 10 because of the class of committees, but I will be back in the afternoon.
Minister?
Don't fight here, Chairperson. Could you excuse me after 11? I have a meeting with the MC about our intervention in Limpopo and it's in Pretoria. But the day will be here. fight with you, Minister. I'm not going to release you. No, I am going to release you. The only thing that I would like us to remember, let us take it that we are all new. We utilize many acronyms because I work with my situation every day, so I just use acronyms. When we refer to one of the boards, just use the acronym. Some of us don't know. We have to look there and see, okay, this is ARIMA, this is the Built Environment, and then ministers also told us there's an urgent meeting that he has to attend of the IMC, Interministerial Committee, but some of us might not know what that is. So just ask us to be mindful, unpack the acronyms so that all of us can be on board. At the appropriate time, kindly take your leave, Minister. I must also say that I'm one of the poorest chairpersons, but outside there's hot water and tea. As we proceed, kindly just walk out and assist yourself whilst it's hot. Otherwise, we'll be charged for fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I'm not sure if there's fruit outside, but kindly help yourself. Director General, we are in your able hands.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We brought quite a big delegation of the department for introduction purposes. During the course of our interactions, we will bring them in relationship to the areas of their expertise. I think that will improve their ability to remember who is who in the next 5 years. Thank you, Chair. My presentation is covering the areas that are required by the committee, strategic plan and the APP, including the budget for the department for the further programs and sub-programs. It may appear that the presentation is very long, but I will try and gallop through it within the time frame that is allowed, and then we'll be able to take questions later. I will cover the following areas broadly: the regulatory and requirements. It will be the first three slides after this. Just to indicate to the members the framework on which guides us in the preparation of the strategy and then the APPs. And then I will do a strategic overview which seeks to summarize the key issues that relate to the legislative and other mandates, the introduction of strategic context, the planned policy initiatives, a situational analysis under which we then prepare the strategic plan and the budget, the performance environment, the organizational environment, and the salient issues on the budget that I think are important for the members to note. Second part, which is a much more detailed part, deals with the areas on which some of the issues that we have covered in part A are to be dealt with. Again, we'll try to summarize them so that we avoid repetition. But we'll look at Program 1, which is administration. Program 2, we'll deal with immovable asset investment management, which is a conglomeration of a number of branches that deliver the core function of the department. Then Program 3 will deal with the funded public works program. Program 4, the construction and property policy regulation program. And then Program 5, which we call auxiliary and associated services, which covers all the other things that I don't quite fit within the first four projects, which are mandated to public works to deliver on. Then part C is infrastructure plan, and I do hope we will be able to reach that. Again, there we will be providing the members with the most, the top projects that are remaining out of the budget within the department, both in the PMTE and the vote, the public works vote. Under the regulatory requirements section, the strategic plan, Honorable Members, prepared in terms of the framework that was issued in September 2010, which provides for a format for preparation of the annual plan strategy for the annual performance plans and strategy plans, as augmented by a further instruction note number 33 in 2011, which deals with the extent of the requirements for full compliance to the mandatory requirements of the plan. We cover 5 years, which as approved by the president and the monitoring department, DPME, will be adjusted appropriately to cater for the issues that we discussed at cabinet order and the priorities that the minister indicated. We can expect two very significant changes that may be nuanced changes when we discuss the strategy plan for the 5 years, having been informed by the new mandate of the term of office of government. The annual document sets out what the institution intends doing in the upcoming financial year and during the MTF period to implement the strategy plan. As I indicated, we have complied with the prescription as provided for by National Treasury in this regard. I think you will see that in the strategic plan, as you read it, the actual document, there are certain formats that we have to add to adhere to. They cover the strategy, table 1, largely, and table 2, and table 3. They are then spread throughout the document. But basically, when we're looking at the strategic objectives and annual targets under table 1, we have to look at the strategic objectives and list them, and the strategic plan for the 5 years issues, and then in the first 3 years we show audited outcomes for the previous 3 years and the year that you are preparing the plan for, and then the next 3 years of the MTS. I think that is necessary because in the past in discussions with the committee, we realized that sometimes there was a realization that certain things have to be done in accordance with that particular format. It is a very strict and rigid format. The last table then shows what would be in an APP every year, which then takes the target of that year, which would have been in the 5-year plan, and break it into quarters. Again, everything you see is almost the same, but then this one deals with details that relate to each of the quarters of the particular annual performance plan. Now, part 2, I'll deal with the strategic overview of the issues in this part. Starting the constitutional mandate, which is provided for under Schedule 4, Part A of the Constitution of the Republic, which deals with the functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. Hence, in that we participate in the structures that are provided for in the Intergovernmental Relations Act, which includes the technical MINMEC and MINMEC as a consultative process that then confirms the policy position of policy developments within the sector and guide the uniform implementation of legislation and policies. The legislative mandate is primarily governed by the Government Improvable Asset Management Act. Here, over the years, you will hear an acronym called IAMA. That will be a reference to this act. We also regulate the construction industry and built environment through the Construction Industry Development Board Act. You will have heard an acronym called CIDB. It's an institution that comes out of this particular act. And the 6 Professional Councils Act that regulate the 6 built environment professions, and through the Council for the Built Environment. Again, you will hear an acronym called CBE, and that relates to that institution. policy mandate from the White Paper on Public Works towards the 21st Century, which was done in 1997. The White Paper creating an enabling environment for construction growth and development in construction industry, which was done in 1999. The Construction Sector Transformation Charter of 2006. The Property Sector Transformation Charter of 2007. The Department of Public Works broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Strategy Document of 2006, Property Management Strategy on Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment, Job Creation and Poverty Alleviation, Document of 2007. And then the Green Building Framework that was developed in 2011. The following government priorities form the basis of the strategy plan, as informed by the ruling party's manifesto, the National Development Plan, translated into the mid and term strategy framework. And I will deal with the areas where we are directly involved. Outcome 4, which can be processed to Chapter 3 of the NDP, requires a different employment to inclusive economic growth. In terms of our programs, the EPWP, which is the Extended Public Works Program, will continue to be an effective cushion that provides poor and unemployed. We have developed Phase 3 of the EPWP, which covers the period 2014-15 to 2018-19, which aims to create the 6 million work opportunities. Outcome 6, which can be cross-referenced to Chapter 4 of the NDP, provide for an efficient, competitive, and responsive infrastructure network, in which case our department will continue to prioritize infrastructure requirements for the NPOEs. Land ports of entry facilities to facilitate cross-border trade and special economic development. That does happen to us. National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy is a coordinated program of action being led by the department and supported by the Construction Industry Development Board to deal with infrastructure maintenance for different sectors. Outcome 7, Chapter 6 of the NDP, provides for the creation of a comprehensive rural development strategy. The department in this case will be collaborating with sector departments and rural communities to coordinate infrastructure planning and ensure a maximum impact in the rural areas, both in terms of the our development of the requirements of the line function department, as well as the use of the properties that belong to the department in those areas. Chapter 12, outcome 12, which is can cross-reference to the aging of the NGP, an efficient and effective development-oriented public service. So strategic planning instruments such as the user asset management plans, the UM, and the custodian asset management plans, which is a consolidation of the totality of each of the department's user asset management plans as a custodian department. The department provides accommodation to user departments that promote integration, accessibility, sustainability, environmental sensitivity, and economic growth and social empowerment. Then there are others are important that we are not directly required, but assigned specific responsibilities that lead to that. Outcome 1, which can be cross-referenced to Chapter 9 of the NDP, which provides for quality basic education. To 2013, the department, in collaboration with the Department of Basic Education, DBE Basic Education, will be replacing in other base structures at 36 schools and making aesthetic improvements to 950 schools into a program called education program. And then outcome 5, Chapter 9 of the NDP provides a skilled and capable workforce to support inclusive growth path. In this case, we have a number of development programs that are run by the department, which include the Young Professionals Program, the Internship Program, the Learnership Program, and the Artisan Program, which provide valuable on-the-job experience and training for the country and for government. Outcome 8, sustainable human settlements and improved quality of household life. Our contribution here through the ICR program of the department consolidates the government services to ensure accessible public services to those living in remote areas. We may have left out chair, but we also contribute by human settlements, choir, land for development of those of various areas, which is part of our portfolio. We then provide the Department of Human Settlements with that requirement, which is run through a structure that has been set up recently of various departments, directors general. Article 10, Chapter 5 of the NDP, protect and enhance our environmental assets and natural resources. We continue to implement the Green Building Framework in line with government's transition to a low carbon economy. And on Outcome 14, which can be cross-referenced to Chapter 15 of the NDP, which provides for nation building and social cohesion, with, amongst other things, through the ICR program, which seeks to ensure that the investments government for government services in various areas is consolidated appropriately, and through the partnership with the City of Swane for a pilot program project for the development of the inner city in Swane, we provide and create a more functional and aesthetically pleasing inner city, and may I say also, we're looking at contributing to revitalization of some of the rural areas, rural towns, including the old mining towns. Introduction. Our vision, can be summarized as follows: that we strive to provide service or to be a service oriented department of public works, delivering value and contributing to the national agenda for social and economic development. Our mission is to provide quality accommodation and related services to our clients, to also efficiently and effectively manage the immovable assets in our custodianship, effectively contribute to the national goals of job creation and poverty alleviation through our expanded public works program, provide expert-based environment advice to our stakeholders, provide strategic leadership to the South African construction and property industry, which also includes the regulation, the regulation of those industries. Our values are the following. Integrity. We want to consistently honor our commitments, upholding ethical behavior and transparent communication, and these are part of the issue that the minister may refer to, which is about changing the culture of the organization. Professionalism. We seek to treat our stakeholders with respect and reliably deliver against expectations. Teamwork, respect diversity while sharing a common purpose and working effectively across the entire department. Innovation, we tirelessly seek opportunities for service delivery improvement at all times. Strategic goals and goal statements that relate to those. Strategic goal number one is an efficient and competitive responsive accommodation infrastructure network that provides for government departments. Our goal statement is to manage the life cycle of immovable assets under the custodianship of the department effectively and efficiently at all times. Provide strategic leadership and regulation of the construction and property sectors to promote economic empowerment and self-development. Our goal statement is to provide leadership to the South African construction and property sectors while ensuring that transformation and regulation thereof through the development of legislation and best practice guidelines. Strategy goal number three is good corporate governance to support effective and efficient service delivery. Our goal statement in that is to provide strategic leadership in ensuring effective governance, sound resource management, and integrity of the operations of the department. Strategic goal number four is decent employment to inclusive economic growth. And our goal statement in that regard is to lead and coordinate the creation of additional employment opportunities through labor-intensive delivery methods and skills programs for the participation of the unemployed in the delivering in delivering needed services and creation of assets. Our strategic goal number 5 is to contribute towards comprehensive rural development. In that regard, our goal statement is improved land administration, special planning for integrated development in urban and rural areas. Under planned policy initiatives, the department will review the department's white paper as I outlined previously, so that we can then take stock of where we are in regard to those and what then changes have occurred since these white papers were put in place, and towards amending and ensuring that we have an appropriate policy framework that is applicable to the demands of the day, and an enabling legal framework, legislative framework, that is appropriate for the department to function appropriately. We also will establish during this period the RMS South Africa as a public entity mandated to assess non-standardized and or unconventional construction products, materials and systems fit for purpose. In this regard, Chair, while AGEMA SA exists, it is exists within the portfolio of the CSIR. But its police functions are sort of regulated and overseen by the department. This act that are passing is seeking to remove that and just formalize it properly so that then we have a proper corporate governance arrangement and oversight over that entity. And to also assist the entity to then achieve some of the areas that we think are kept within the process, within their mandate.
Second, Director, I'm not sure if it's coming at the later stage or somebody else who have a responsibility, but it would also assist members of parliament if we're able to indicate we have stated objectives in terms of the National Development Plan, but as a department, how much money are we able to allocate to specific areas? So, more or less, there's this area of responsibility, there's that area of responsibility. But on the basis of the budget that we have, how much do we have, what shortfall is there? So when you do oversight, and people said you are going to do this, but if you only had 5 rand to do a job that needs 20,000, there's so much that you can do. So that type of indication would also be useful.
In certain areas, we may attempt to do that, but over time, I think we will reevaluate. As I said, we will reassess and develop the strategic plan and adjust in certain areas. Then, at that point, we'll be able to indicate the actual effect of the economics and of the resource allocation. But in the budget, we are able to indicate the areas that relate to some of those particular projects. We will link it to the program that we will discuss.
As opposed to the reference, we have key priority areas.
Yes.
For those key priority areas, what's the budget allocation? Basically, that's what I'm asking. Because we'll have to deliver. We'll be judged in accordance with those key priority areas that you have been able to deliver or you have not been able to deliver. So up front, if we know that this is the allocation in order to carry out this task, but in an ideal situation, this would have been what we have. We all know that there are budget constraints, but rough figures within that context. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. We will also develop the draft built environment professions policy towards possible amendments to the legislative framework governing the built environment professions. We also will be promulgating a new exploration act, which is...
We actually hope to bring to the portfolio committee quite soon a new exploration.
Yes, I was going to... Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. We'll bring it to the portfolio committee for promulgation later, yes. This act, most of the work relating to this has already been done in the previous term of office, and it will be ready, the reason to come to this committee. This act is seeks to ensure that there is consistency with the constitution and uniformity in the expropriation of property by all expropriating authorities. I think there may be a session to take the committee through at a later stage. We also will develop legislation to establish the Independent Development Trust as a public entity to support the state in the delivery of social infrastructure. But this one is still at discussion level. Should cabinet come to the conclusion that they may not be a need, but just to remind you, we will advise the committee around that. But because good governance demands that if you establish an entity, you rather regulate it properly, ensure that all issues that relate to its mandate and everything are legislated properly. We anticipate that we may well come to the committee to achieve that after the cabinet has considered it. Also, develop a green building policy and strategy for the department to give effect to the government's green economy initiatives. In addition, there, we anticipate that we will be developing a public works general laws amendment and repeal act to amend or repeal legislation assigned to departments that are in concern. Various pieces of legislation, quite a number of them, that are old and inconsistent with the constitution. Some of them are redundant and absolute. Nobody has been using them for quite some time. They are no longer relevant. Some of them are specific area related, and the object is already were changed a long time ago. We also will be reviewing the Construction Industry Development Board Act of 2000 and its regulations to determine legislative and regulatory challenges that may hinder the CIDB from achieving its mandate. And in recent discussions with the CEO and mandate started by the minister, they're also looking at the gaps that exist, whether in the regulations or in the act itself, in dealing with some of the issues that we've recently found. For example, the issue of inappropriate tax practices by the sector, some of which may have culminated into the collusion reports that have been reported about. Then there will be, we will develop CIDB regulations to ensure prompt payments to contractors and subcontractors, ensure the use of CIDB's registered subcontractors on public sector contracts, and provide for the use of CIDB registered contractors on home building contracts. We'll revise the CIDB regulation on register of contractors, addressing contractor grading criteria for grade 1 registration, contractor grading criteria for contractor registration as well, requirements for the submission of the broad-based economic empowerment recognition level registration, incorporated a demerit system with reportable health and safety incidents. We'll also develop built environment professions regulations dealing with functions of a BEP counter. That, in that regard, that will deal with, for example, the recognition of prior learning, the registration of professionals, the codes of conduct, the accreditation of the built environment programs offered by tertiary institutions, and continuous development of professionals. And proactive participation in the property and construction sector charter councils will revise and align the sector charter codes to the revised broad-based black economic empowerment codes of good practice of 2013. We'll also ensure that the councils give effect on their mandate of encouraging transformation of the construction and property sectors. We'll also revise the contractor incubator program strategy and guidelines to ensure alignment of the CIDB, which is the CIDB's National Contractor Development Program, and the Department of Public Works Business Processes, to facilitate mentorship and enhance development of contractors, particularly for grade 3 to 16. We will commence with the development of an immovable asset management strategy that ensures that we deal with holistically and uniformly with the management of immovable assets to comply with the requirements of KMA. We commence with the development of policy to ensure viable and efficient management and maintenance of heritage assets under the custodianship of the department. Part of this is to see initiatives that ensure that we don't get into the kind of levels of cost that we find ourselves faced with when we have to deal with heritage assets, maintenance, upgrading, etc. Then we'll also deal with the policy on the use of non-core space, including advertising on state-owned property in the department's portfolio to ensure that we maximize the revenue collections in that regard. Educational assets, I'll just browse through this check because most of it is well known and dealt with by various documents in the country. The economic outlook remains very difficult and robust, and therefore it puts a lot of pressure to the industry. If you consider that most of the input costs, some of them are affected by the dollar, they are affected by the inflation, they also affected the dollar, rand exchange, affected by inflation, and in some cases the interest rate outlook that may actually change in the next 5 years as projected for what is currently happening in the interest rate environment. We also expect higher inflation rates, and therefore there will be a lot of pressure on contractors, which then require that both the department and those who are assisting it in developing various projects look at efficiencies, etc. I think the risks that we see that relate to unemployment due to the strained industrial relations and strained government finances, price escalation, further collusion in leasing and construction projects, depreciation of the rent, credit ratings are the risks that exist that always will face one or two of the activities of the department over the 5 years. We have taken into account those factors, and obviously every year as we do the MTF, we'll then adjust our situation to address those issues. Internally, Chair, the following factors have been taken into consideration in the preparation of the plan. The issue of the resource constraints significant, while there's been the issue of resource constraints, we have made progress in terms of overhauling the immovable asset register. We have also looked at the issue of reviewing the private leases and the lease management processes. As the minister indicated, also we have sought to address the audit findings, the audit outcome situation. Operationalization of the PMT, therefore, which is the property management trading entity, is critical in ensuring that we lift the profile of the department, because it will be a high profile component of the department that then will deal with a major part of core business of the department, and it in providing property management and facilities management services. The issue of inadequate capacity continued to affect us, particularly in critical business areas of our business. We also had a difficult fragmented ICT system that environment that compromised our data integrity processes and also experienced weak SEM processes and procedures over the years that have led to the negative audit outcomes that we've seen. All of these have been addressed in terms of the three bullets that you have indicated. Supply chain management processes of the department. The ICT is the information in information communication technology systems. I think in the triplets there we are seeking to indicating broadly all the issues that we are undertaking in order to address these areas. Under service delivery improvements, the development and implementation of service delivery improvement plans, which is a statutory requirement to achieve continuous incremental service delivery improvement over the three-year horizon, has been commenced with. We have an SIP that has been developed in the previous financial year and approved by the minister, which is included in the targets and areas of the strategic plan and the APP. It sets out three areas of improvement which have been identified through a scientific situational analysis, and these are area of provisioning of accommodation to construction, the provisioning of accommodation to private leases, aligning it with the infrastructure development, infrastructure delivery improvements program. Yes. And then the customer relationship management, which is one of the areas that you will have alluded to in your introduction about the image of the department. In order to measure client satisfaction levels, the SDIP includes the development of client satisfaction surveys, which we will conduct, service delivery standards, and charters within selected areas for improvement, and will be judged on those over 10 years. In the preference environment, the minister alluded to the turnaround strategy. I will not go into detail with regard to that. I think it did indicate that we have a 7-year strategic plan, a turnaround plan, that has three main phases, which is the phase of stabilization, efficiency enhancement, and sustainability and growth, which would be the area we would say to be like home affairs, as we speak. It also has to, throughout the process, be implemented through a transmission and change management process for each of those areas and each of the projects under each of those areas. We have made significant progress with regard to phase one, okay, which was primarily to address the critical and fundamental aspects of the department. We treat each of these projects not as events that are separate, but the continuation of the improvement process of the department. We, for example, are now implementing the beginning stages of the efficiency enhancement phase of the turnaround strategy as we will conclude, as we are concluding phase one. Part of the issues under phase one is that outcomes that we will look at is the improvement in the audit outcomes over the period. For reasons of impact and strategic importance, we had 10 projects that have been conceptualized from 23 key stabilization projects, which are essential drivers of phase two for the rebuilding of the department. And they are, as I will indicate, the first one is the development of a service delivery framework. I've alluded to the issue of the SDIB, which already exists. The second one is the operationalization of the property management trading entity and establishment of it as a government component in terms of the institutional form within the Department of Public Works, the vote under the oversight of the Minister of Public Works. In that regard, it has also three phases: stabilization, transitional phase, and then it also aligns with the theme of the turnaround, which is the last phase being created, all the stability and best practices for growth in the business of the entity. I will not go through the various the small projects within those. They are all listed slide number 22. The third one is the developing a complete and credible register of state assets, state immovable assets. We have established an intergovernmental structure currently known as the Provincial State Land Vesting and Disposal Committee, which has been developed with a view to coordinating movable asset disposal processes as well as confirmation of vesting of all asset, state immovable assets in the national provincial sphere. 42,000 state land registered, unregistered, and Section 42 land parcels. For clarity, we'll provide the specific description that relate to that, have been reconciled, although the custodianship of some over 1,400 land parcels is being resolved. Previously, there were various pieces of land which we need to establish whether it's owned by a department in a province or any of the national provinces of national department, and those are being resolved through checking with the deeds register as part of then completing the asset register. We have faced physical verification for 32,570 properties, and 13,300 land parcels have been vested. That means they have been allocated to their correct custodian entities, whether it's a province or it's another department. Number four, we will be conducting a comprehensive audit of leased properties. We have done a comprehensive audit of the leased properties and establishment of a leased framework. And this includes a comprehensive audit of 2,161 leased properties that have been identified and done, with a physical verification of 2,143 of these leased properties, looking at all the performance requirements that relate to that, including whether or not they're being used for the purposes for which they were done, and whether the list of the agreement, the space being leased is matches with the render that is being paid. A proposed to be a functional model. Business processes and lease management structures have been developed, including the revised standard lease agreement template, preliminary checklist of documents to be rooted in a lease file, and lease management policy. We had to change the systems and make sure that the internal control systems that ensure that all our leases are compliant with the proper lease management process. Then phase two, we'll look at focus on the leasing out-of-state properties of about 2,000 properties to the private sector, which will include desktop audit of lease files relating to these properties. Again, we want to make sure that everything is in order and ensure that government is not taken for a ride with regard to the use of its assets. The fifth one is structuring of the supply chain management to better meet our business requirements, and we're working on this with the Department of with National Treasury in ensuring that our FCM processes are improved. I will not go into detail with regard to that. The sixth one is improving internal efficiencies to meet service delivery requirements of the prestige clients. The aim of the project is to make processes for the allocation and dealing with the ministerial, presidential, parliamentary, villages, etc., allocation, management processes more systemic, efficient, and effective, so that we can derive higher levels of client satisfaction and achieve greater internal efficiency. We have made progress on the project, and this includes the development of a service delivery model, organization structure, resource plan, and a special supply chain management dispensation that relates to prestige, to this portfolio, as well as compilation of norms and standards document that relates to this proceeding through is the portfolio that deals with the accommodation of presidents, current and former, the ministers, which also includes the parliamentary villages, the management of the parliamentary villages, and that provides accommodation to the members. Developing an information technology strategy, architecture and platform as a key enabler. As a part of the efficiency and enhancement phase, the ICT conversions will commence after 2015 with a focus thereafter to further develop and value, development and value-added services with a clear architectural framework, supporting infrastructure and adequate resources to support the department. What has happened, which is one of the things that has caught us, is that we've had a development of a plethora of systems to address specific areas, but most of them are not coordinated, nor are they talking to each other, and some of them are legacy programs, systems that are no longer making the business partners of the department. We have started to stabilize that process first to make sure that at least we meet the basic compliance requirements. But the issue is to have a comprehensive integrated strategy that will ensure that we then start to derive efficiencies that emanate from that. Improving infrastructure delivery through application of best practices in terms of processes, structures, and systems. We have what is called infrastructure delivery management system that has been we have now complied with as the national government. We seek to ensure that our delivery infrastructure is now properly aligned to also be able to manage and monitor performance of the project. Unlike in the past where you discover late, too late that you are underperforming on projects. The departmental work plan has been developed in this regard aimed at sustainable implementation of this IDMS. The ninth one is actively combating fraud and corruption, both within the department, in the construction and property sectors, holding transgressors accountable for the action. I think the minister has spoken at length with regard to that. Development and implementation of an effective change management strategy that enables a performance-driven culture. A change management project is a key driver to any of the things that we want to implement. And in that regard, we have to have a change management intervention that is designed to systematically support all areas of the department to effectively change the way in which business is conducted and to make the department a client-centric one while continuing to improve its service delivery. And in the organizational environment, these are the main areas, the main business units or branches that form the core of the organization, which is Business Improvement Unit, located in the DG's office. And then I think some of the members of the department have introduced what they are doing. They are all listed in that in the organizational structure. We have reviewed the organization structure, which has been at the time when we did this, it was going to be approved. And I can confirm that the minister had a look at it, approved it, but we're in discussions with the Department of Public Services Administration in order to ensure that it is concluded in the current year. I think I will skip most of those issues. They are very self-explanatory.
Director General, just as you keep a general word of, for want of better conceptualization, caution to everyone in the room. The chair, the Director General has a very soothing voice. The weather is also such that we might be prone to fall asleep. Now, the last time, during one of the sessions I chaired as a chairperson, there was one person who had the unfortunate experience to take a mandate from ancestors during the portfolio committee. And then unfortunately, the mouth fell open because you can't control your bodily functions when you are asleep. And the false teeth and a mouth fell out of the mouth. It was very embarrassing, obviously, for the person, and everybody had to have a sight of this. So I would encourage us to try not to fall asleep. Please continue, sir.
I think I was watching the time as well. I thought some of the areas are very clear, and in some cases I may have touched on some of them. So I will skip a couple of slides and just go to the slide number 30 that deals with public entities. We have four public entities that go to public work. As we had indicated, it's the Construction Industry Development Board, the Council for Built Environment, and the Agreement South Africa, and the Independent Development Trust. Their functions are outlined in the slide. Just a broad look at the budget, Chair, and then and a few salient issues that will then finish this part of the presentation. Our vote objectives are achieved to five programs, which is the administration and movable asset management and expanded public works program, property construction and industry policy regulation and auxiliary services. In the year under review, we have the following allocations: 1.1 billion for administration, 2.8 billion for program to movable assets, 1.9 billion for expanded public works program, and 41.4 million, 91.8 million for property construction industry and auxiliary services programs, very small programs of the department. Year on year, you will see that there's a slight reduction, which actually came about as a result of the austerity measures and the budget cuts that had to be effected across government. And I will indicate the areas where there have been reductions in respect of the programs. In the following slide, if you look at economic classification, the three main areas, current payments, which is a compensation in goods and services, our budget grows from 2.8 to 2.9, and that growth is largely only in the compensation of employees item, just to compensate for inflationary growth. And in some cases, reorganization of the structure reflect the new structure. And if you go and look at transfers and subsidies, which is transfers to entities and other spheres of government, largely provinces and municipalities, largely for the grants under the EPWP, the budget, there's a slight reduction in allocation from 1.2 in the year that has passed, 1.225 to 1.2, which is almost like a stable allocation. But in the, for the MGF, goes slightly to 1.2, and then in the third year of the coming MGF, to an increase to 1.4. If we find time, Chair, we will get to the background of those allocations. And then physical assets for capital, physical payments for capital assets, which are largely assets, capital expenditure for public works. Last year we have 778 million. In the current year we will have 585 million, growing to 984 and 981 over the MTF. In total, our budget is 6.121 million, slight reduction from last year's allocation of 6.175 billion. It grows slightly to 6.5 billion in next year, and then to 7.1 million in the third year of the MTF. I think I've some issues around the baseline is that over the 2014 MTF, amount of 245 million was reprioritized from infrastructure budget to compensation of employees, goods and services, and transfers and subsidies. The reprioritization of funds for compensation of employees was intended to cover projected shortfalls on compensation. The department has, over the years, experienced problems of underfunding and compensation as a result incurred unauthorized expenditure. We had to correct the situation so that it don't continue to be on the wrong side of the law, and we have managed to balance that. We've also reprioritized 40 million additional funds for goods and services in order to deal with the issue of the inauguration and other state functions in Program 5, which was a result of the fact that we couldn't be getting more allocations from National Treasury. In the next slide, there are no budget allocation increases to the baseline between 2014 and 15 and 2015 and 16 over and above the figures that were already published. The allocation increase to the baseline of 2016-17 amounts to 159 in support of the following areas: 74 million for the EPW social sector, 65 million for the EPW non-state sector grant, 10 million for the EPWP integrated grant to provinces, and then 10 million for the EPWP integrated grant to municipalities. I think over the 2014 MTF period, if you look at the published figures and the annual reductions to baselines that have been affected, we have suffered a 1.3 baseline reduction, which affected the following areas compared to the previous published figures. 650 million in the infrastructure projects, 150 million on non-core goods and services items in all programs, 26.2 million in compensation of employees relating to those areas that were not imposed, that were no longer required. And then 150 on transfers to the property management trading entity, and 308 million broadly on the expanded public works program. Spending on infrastructure decreased from 1.3 billion in 20. Oh, okay, I've already alluded to this when I was discussing the overall allocation. Chair, there are funds that are earmarked for specific purposes and specific entities. They're all listed here. They relate to the transfer, intergovernmental transfers and the transfer to non-state sector that relate to the EWP programs, then transfer to our entities that receive money from the department, the Construction Industry Development Board, the Council for Built Environment, and the Independent Development Trust. And then there's an allocation, a historical allocation to augment, as augmentation of the cost of running the PMTE and the under recoveries as a result of the centralization of the budget. And all of these amount funds amount to 3.439 the budget, and 3.7 next year, and 4 billion in the last year of the MTF. Now, the strategic objectives, the part which is strategic objectives and project program plans, I think most of the issues around the outcomes and outputs out of those are covered in my first slide. In the interest of time, we thought we would pass it and just run through the most important aspects that relate to the DPW infrastructure budget for the committee, if the committee allows, which is part four, and then we will have finished the presentation after that. Even that, I will go through just the most important ones that are all listed in the presentation. Our infrastructure budget, mainly in terms of the major categories, consists of what we call departmental infrastructure projects, accessibility infrastructure program, dolomite risk and management program. When I say sub-program, if you compare with the fact that the actual programs of vote have been indicated, the inner city regeneration and the prestige. We have got 95 programs under the departmental. We will look at some of them later. 119 from what we call accessibility program. This is a program to improve some of the programs that require improvement in order to for them to be accessible to the differently abled people with disabilities, in order to improve the access and comply with the legislation. Those programs are being implemented in some of those buildings that not comply with the requirements. Then we also have particularly a program that deals with dolomitic conditions largely around the Swane area. We have plans that in the south of this situation, and we have to make sure that it's fixed immediately. And then those that deal with the land plots of Endres. Now, the significant projects under these will include the following, and let us run through. I will not mention all of them, I'll just pick on the big ones. The Pretoria Salvocorp contribution to bus services. Pretoria Salvocorp is an area that will be developed later for as a precinct for government, but we need to ensure that there's infrastructure, there's adequate infrastructure underneath. This process is already developing their accommodation requirements. You can't have that building finished without then the bulk services being available for it to be functional. We also have a project in Maseru, Border Post, and we have provided for phase 1, 2, and 3. In the first year of this allocation is 100 million. Here we are constructing access road and upgrading and redeveloping the Border Post requirements for Home Affairs and all of the participants like FAS and functionalities there. They are building HGTV, that building, which is had to be in Pretoria Central, which had to be developed for not student accommodation anymore. We have recently changed that requirement as part of for office accommodation because of the it was originally intended for student accommodation. We had to have discussions with the Department of Higher Education recently after we had developed the plans, and they have agreed that they will abandon that and fit within the Swane planning arrangements with regard to accommodation, which is moving accommodation from that area to the western side of Pretoria. So we will now be developing this building. Essentially, professional advice has indicated that we need to actually demolish and rebuild afresh because there are structural problems and you cannot improve on it. As I say, we provided 38 million for the current year to deal with that. And then, which other one? Yes. In number 6, Cape Town Parliamentary Complex, 120 Prince Street. The replacement of the 15 lifts you've already seen were happening. It's to be completed by the first of this month. And then Golela Port, Border Post as well, which is the redevelopment of that land, port of entry, which will include development of new buildings and repairs and maintenance to existing buildings, including upgrading them for better functionality. So there's quite a lot of money that is being spent on land ports of entry to ensure that we support Home Affairs and those entities that are participating there in achieving black holes. I think there are various other programs we can explain when if members want specific information that relates to those. Then we also have on 56 what we call plane maintenance under the BMTE infrastructure budget, which is in the year under review, having an allocation of 1.6 billion. Again, we've provided some of the projects that are being implemented there, which includes on slide 57, Durban Central Police Station, which is a complete repairs and renovation to station complex, single quarters, and surrounding buildings within the complex, that we exclude the Natalia Court. That is a project that is being implemented there. And it's about complete repairs and renovations to the station complex. Then we have one in Pietermaritzburg, like old and new prison, which is maintenance for bulk electrical and mechanical installations.
Just a second, please.
Yes.
With regard to page 57,
yes,
where we say project details, and then point number one, Durban Central, are we speaking about 67 billion?
It's supposed to be 67 million. Sorry, those zeros found themselves there. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. 67 million. Yeah. Can we then cancel all the zeros that you see on those slides? No, there was nothing before, so I asked that. Okay, thank you, Chair, for that. It's not about 67 million. We do not have that kind of money. Thank you. Then on page 58, in Mthatha, and the rehabilitation project that leads to the military base, 14 Sai military base in Mthatha. And then a few others, Chair, I think I have decided not to go through all of them in detail. Planned maintenance capital. For the year under review, we have allocated, and it's all under the property management trading entity, 1 billion for planned maintenance capital, and the significant projects in this regard include a building in Pretoria called Agrival Building, which is to provide new accommodation for government departments, Department of Public Service and Administration, I think they are the clients that have taken. It's expected to be completed before the end of the year. That is the budget that's been allocated. Then the next one of significance, inner chambers repair, is in Johannesburg. Repair and innovations, 54.5 million. And then there are those other projects in Anderson Street, Prestige Portfolio, Facilities Management Contract, and then rehabilitation of 99 Section Road in Durban for 21.9 million, refurbishment of the residences of sectional officials in the three parliamentary villages in order to ensure that sufficient space is provided for members. And they accommodate their own the accommodation of men for the special officials, 19.5 million. Then we also will be working on rehabilitating our old DPW workshops in Prince Edward Street in order for the region of Durban to start to utilize much more our own workshops to reduce outsourcing offsetting of the maintenance work in Durban.
Please, Director Andrew. Yes, Mr. Adams, sir.
The person with hearing thousands, I was looking through the presentation before the minister goes. I just want to get some clarity or clarification about two pertinent issues that have now surfaced over the last couple of weeks. It's the sale of Bosma Prison, the prime land, and the UCOP. I don't see it in the presentation, so I would just like to, with your indulgence, if we can just get clarity before Minister gets onto the plane. Please, Jay.
You have flagged the issue, but let us allow the DG to continue. I'm sure a reply will be proffered, even if the Minister is not there, but he has read the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will then move to the last part of the presentation. I will skip. I think we have listed all of the processes. I think we will be able to respond with my colleague on further details that are required, that may be required to elucidate on those. I'll go straight to slide 66, because I think it's important it is raised to the one of our major programs. We have incentive allocations under the EPWP. The first grant we have is the integrated grants, the EPW integrated grants to various provinces for infrastructure, environment, and culture. They amount to, in the year under review, is 148 million. Last year it was 56, the slight reduction as a result of the pressure to reduce the cost. The second one is the social sector incentive grant, which is also given to the social sector participants, of 257 million has not been reduced compared to last year. And then the third grant is to municipalities. Again, it is also for infrastructure, cultures, sorry, environment, culture, and social sector participation in the program. And then we also make transfers to non-profit institutions, which are generally non-state institutions, who meet a certain criteria for implementing and help assisting us in implementing EPWP program projects. These are the grants that amount of money is not spent in the department. It's transferred to those entities, and we have a monitoring mechanism at EPWP to ensure that they meet their delivery requirements around the job opportunities. If you look at the EPW integrated grant transfers and expenditure for the municipal sector for 2020, the year under the year that has just passed, the performance there has been 71% at the end of the year. We have transferred 611 million. They managed to spend as the municipalities in the various provinces 485, fell short by 29%. We will provide the explanations for that during the discussion. In the current year, the allocation for that grant is 594, split into by province. Eastern Cape getting an increase in allocation from 92 to 100. Free State, a slight reduction from 37 to 31. Gauteng, the reduction from 143 to 89. KwaZulu-Natal, a slight increase from 114 to 129. Limpopo, from 13 to 49. Mpumalanga, from 41 to 54 in the current year. Northern Cape, from 37 last year to 38 this year. Northwest, 37 last year to 40 this year. Western Cape, 66 last year to 58 in the current year. Then the allocations to provinces are provided in slide 69, and the allocation and the performance in the year that has just passed in this regard has been that of the 354 that was transferred from the amount of 356 that was available, 91% of the spend, which amounts to 221 million. And the different provincial performances are outlined in the report from an expenditure perspective. Looking at the allocation compared to last year, Eastern Cape had an amount of 79.5 million last year, reduced to 69.5 million this year. Free State had 18 million, increased to 26 million. Gauteng 15, increased to 23 in this regard. KwaZulu-Natal 102, reduced to 97 million. Limpopo 49, reduced to 32. Mpumalanga 34, increased to 39. Northern Cape 15 million, increased to 20 million. Northwest 17, reduced to 14.2 million. Western Cape 25, reduced slightly to 24, almost the same allocation. Social sector incentive grants to provincial departments. Performance last year was 95%, as 255 were transferred, of which 232.6 million was spent by the province collectively. Their individual performance is outlined in the slide. EBW social sector allocation going forward. Eastern Cape reduces from 49 in last year to 41.7 this year. Free State increases from 8.5 to 11.7. Gauteng 27.6 to 73.3. KwaZulu-Natal reduced from 24.3 to 19.5. Limpopo reduced from 57.7 to 18.6. Mpumalanga increases from 1.9 to 18.8. Northern Cape increased from 19.8 to 22. Northwest reduced from 50.8 to 26.3. Western Cape increased from 16.9 to 25.8. 2015-16 and 2016 allocation breakdown to provinces are dependent on the previous financial year's performance. So where there have been reductions, you'll see there should be a correlation to how their performance in the past has been. This is meant to ensure that you do not continue to pour in money in areas where there is not going to be spending, and you allocate to those areas while you make interventions to assist where possible with improving that performance. We take a view that where there is underperformance, you reduce, amongst other things that are contributing to the reduction. Chair, I think that is the presentation. I apologize if it was too long.
Thank you, Director General. We do need the information. Something of interest is, if you could kindly explain, if it's possible, right now. If you look at the province of Northwest, it's underspent by 60.2 million in the past, and they're due to receive an increase of 3.2 million. So how do we explain? In the past, they failed to utilize the money expended to them, and 67? And then if we look at slide 67 and 68, I'm not able to prove a reason right now, it's fine. Well, or is it something that we are flagging?
Yes.
So that we look at those issues. Please continue, the next person. You're done with your contribution.
Yes.
Our program states that 11:30 we are due to have a tea break. And the cheapest watch in the room does say it's 11:30. So perhaps you could break at this time and have some tea. Also, have a slight comfort break and come back. We'll come back at 11:40. Thank you very much. Shall we adjourn?
think, an occasion that is much more important.
Thank you. Thank you.
Director General, who is the next person to continue? Department, you can continue with hugging and kissing afterwards. Can you take them out? We did say that we'll resume at 11:40. I might have the cheapest watch in the room, but it's functional. So in future, kindly check your timings. I will now avail the opportunity to members for comments and questions. Shall we start with Honorable Mrs. Adams? I've noted you.
Thank you, Chairperson. That is quite a lot of information to disseminate. Very, very much. But I start on the EPW integrated grant. We know that this department is is a custodian of job driving. And I would like to know from the DG, slide 67, there is a breakdown of the EPW integrated grant transfer and expenditure. And the total expenditure transfers spent is 71%. That leaves us with 29% not spent. That is slide 67%. Chairperson, I want to know first, does the Department of Public Works engage with municipalities that do not spend their EPWP grants? Is it this principle of concurrency that hinders them to do that? Because If we don't do that, we will compromise on service delivery and job creation, especially for these. And then we need a report. So much money is transferred for EPW grants. We need a report, a progress report of what the department is doing to enhance government's hands for job creation. Then the other thing, slide 69 is on the transfer and expenditure of provincial departments. There we have a expenditure percentage of 91. Can the DG give us, tell us if this expenditure was it fruitful? It could be fiscal dumping also. Can you give us that procedure? I'm African speaking, please. Yeah. And you do have the insurance. Thank you, Jefferson. Then, the allocation to this is still with the EPWP. How do you calculate the amount of grants to each province? Is it done per capita or how is it done? And then the last one, this is a tongue-in-cheek one, Jefferson, on slide 71. There is a breakdown of the allocations on the social sector incentive grant given to the provinces. And there's a percentage grant on transfer spent, and I see now the website spent 101%. What happens to the allocations not spent by the province? Go they back to the fiscus, or what happens to them? And I'd like to teach you this talk also, this is the very last one. On his strategic goals, he said there's ensuring that there will be transformation. How does this department of OCTA, how does it transform? What measures are it to drive transformation in our country? Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. The next, I'll come to you. The next one was Honorable Mubu.
Yes, it's Mubu. It means soil. From the sun of the soil. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for your presentation, Director General. Like Honorable Adams, I think I'm also just overwhelmed with the information that we received today. Considering that some of us are first-time members of this committee, but I think it was very helpful in understanding what the work of this person is. Just a couple of questions. I just want to check with you, Director General, to what extent do you work with the competition authorities in terms of managing the particular construction? We know the story that happened sometime last year regarding the collision and so on and so forth. To what extent do you collaborate with them? You mentioned that you are in the process of establishing legislation for the establishment of IGT as a public entity. I was wondering, how does it exist now? Does it exist in the vacuum? There's no legislation that governs it? Thirdly, the issue of maintenance of heritage sites, though that exists outside of this country too, why are we maintaining like war graves in other countries? What importance is that to South Africa? The last question I want to ask is, money was moved from the Inner City Regeneration Program and the Development Program towards the construction of Kanda. To what extent was this, did this affect the social programs that the department is supposed to be participating in? I think I'll stop that, Chairman. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mubu, in your contribution, there's an aspect that might need clarity. I also saw the Director General was looking at you very surprised. In your engagement, you said that last year there were newspaper reports about collusion in the building industry. And you said, how does the department cooperate with them, the colluders?
I was saying how the department cooperate with the competition authorities. I'm talking about the competition commission.
That didn't come out clear.
Oh, it didn't. Oh, I beg your pardon. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, DG, for your presentation. On page 37, there is an allocation of Parliamentary Village Management Board. Just I want a clarity on that. What this one's for? Oh, and there's this. Page 37. Okay. Page 37. Parliamentary Village Management Board. Can I continue? Okay. And there is a grant for municipalities. Is a grant for municipalities also a grant for municipalities? That's a clarity. What is the difference? Because the funds are not the same.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Fulton. Thanks, sir. I've got about six questions.
This one is what is on page, based on page 8.
Last bullet point, outcome 12. And you can read that in conjunction with the budget of 19 million, if I remember the figure well, for appropriately improving accessibility by disabled people. I can't remember the page, but I know there is that kind of a budget. Now, my question on that one is, by when does the department plan to make, to finalize the accessibility of existing government buildings for these people? I'm sure I'm the only one who has had the unpleasant experience of having to listen to someone who is disabled, who is dying to access a government building, but comes to the entrance and says, but how do they expect us to climb these staircases? I'm sure I'm not the only one. I rather think that the department by now should be having a target to say, at least the existing buildings will finalize them by year XYZ. Instead of just having an ongoing year-on-year plan to appropriately, you know, reconstruct them. That's the first point. The second one is on page 12, read together with another bullet point. This is point 12. Page 12, goal statement number 2. So sequentially speaking, it's not annotated like that. You can read that together with the third bullet point on page 15. It's about the development of the contractors, upgrading them. For me, this continues to be a very, very sore point, that billions and billions of rands are being spent by government on major construction companies on an ongoing basis. But we find an ongoing and embarrassing and painful sight of Africans not having an opportunity to participate in those mega billion, you know, contracts, construction. Why is it that Africans are not, don't seem to be able to get that opportunity? We know it's about qualification, but my question is, what is the department doing to make sure that African construction companies do actually have the necessary experience and qualification so that their companies can be greater? Because, you know, we are all aware of the of what went out in the media last year about the big five colluding and fines. And some of us thought to ourselves, you can find them as much as you want. It's still coming money. This is money that was built into the cost
of the buildings, and if you say we find them 1 point something billion, they should be laughing at you to say it's still government money that we are settling the hill of this fight. Why don't we have a penalty, imprisonment for collusion? That's number one. Number two, what plan does the government, the department have to make sure that African companies do get, you know, they do have necessary qualifications? And the third question is on based on page 17, third bullet point. Now, in the last sentence, the last 4 words say, before accelerating between 2016 and 2018. Now, what is the rationale for that expectation that the economic outlook will accelerate, you know, at that time? Expected maybe with the deep budget, expected that it will pick up in the years 2016, 2017. And last one is on page 23, bullet point number 3. When does the department plan, not estimate, plan to finalize such an important register? I'm also serving in the Portfolio Committee of Land Affairs. So this becomes very critical, you know, in the context of us continuing to call ourselves a constitutional democracy. These are state assets. When do we plan to finalize, you know, that register so that we know exactly what kind of stock do we have as government? Page 35. Proceeds clients. Number 6 there. I was happy to hear that our residences are classified as, were classified as proceeds clients. You can be sure saying that with the tongue in cheek. You're right. It's not as blatant. It's not as simple as a phrase. Now, my comment there is, Didi, your department is seriously and continuously underperforming them. You either take a decision to improve or you let it slide. Because the lady I spoke to the other day, she says, this is her second term in Parliament. She moved into a house because she was tired of living in an hotel for 4 months at the beginning of the 2004th Parliament. Finally, she said, allocate my house no matter the condition. She says, for honey, there has not been any improvement on that house. I won't give you the number because I'm not dealing with specifically. I'm just citing this as an example. They are incredibly slow in making sure that they do give us. In an example, I'll give another example. It's a selfish one, but it's a very high one. That's why I don't mind giving you. Complained about a fridge. The DD decided to deliver the fridge, but they didn't tell me. I'm in Parliament, and so I missed out on that fridge. I'm thinking this is the best one, of course, a very, very minor thing. But there are people who are living in shady conditions in Acacia, in particular. You have to plan to avoid coming to work on even day in order for them to move. Take it seriously and do something about it, or you leave it as it is. 5 years from now, there will be people who will be making a similar statement here. Last one, and that's on page 28. This one on page 28, second bullet point, targeted human resource attention with the recruitment of blah, blah, blah. Now, the department admits that it's got shortcomings when it comes to that. What is the problem about us having our own institute, call it whatever, so that we teach people what we know is going to be required, the technical skills that will be required in order for the department, you know, to do its job. This is the same thing. You listen to any other department, you're going to come across the same crime, that we short staff because we just do not have the technical. What is the problem with public works, servicing, state government, state, you know, institutions that state, you know, property? Why is it that we continue to say, isn't this embarrassment that as a country, as a government department, we should say we don't have the technical stuff to do this? We're not asking you to produce astronauts. This is simple technical stuff over after 20 years. Thank you, sir.
On that aerological note, thank you. Honorable Shafta, Honorable Masondo, is there anything that you'd like to? Did I miss you? My apologies, sir. please, Babu Masango. Yes.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to the DG. I've been with DG since 2004, and I think it's nice to follow you also where you are going. Chair, I just want to check on the outcome for Chapter 3 of the NDPs. They talk about different employment, and on the other side, we are talking about EPWP. I think at some stage we should define decent employment so that everybody understands what we mean by decent employment or decent job. But just into the EPWP, you spoke about monitoring mechanism. And you know, on one side, yes, I agree we should create employment. It's important to create employment. But on the other side, this employment must give us service delivery. There must be value for an employment for those people. And you know, you drive around in this country, you see people that are doing the EPWP sitting next to the road. Every time you just meet them sitting. And that's why we are having so many riots of service delivery, because people don't see any value for them. So sometimes when you say you are talking about this monitoring, it must really be a value. I mean, we have this incentive where we pay municipalities for creating employment. But always my question is, are we checking the quality of job or the quality of project or the completion of the project so that there is value for money? I mean, we cannot hit another grant indirectly to this EPWP. This must be a money paid for service rendered rather than just creating employment, but we don't see value out of those employment. The other one is outcome number one, chapter 9. And I want to take this one with another one, quality-based education. We're talking about collaboration. And I just feel, where do we see the department? I mean, how do we measure? What are the key performance areas for the department on this collaboration? And I didn't even see your budget on this, all this collaboration. The same with the rural development. You talk about them, but we really don't understand what you are adding value there. What is it? I mean, what is the budget? There's nothing said about the budget, so that you can actually check what are you doing when you say, because here you're talking about 36 schools and making aesthetic improvement too, but we didn't hear any budget on those students. The same with the rural development. But I just want to go again to inner city regeneration. And I can still remember this thing, inner city regeneration, has been in Swane for so many years now. I don't understand, when are we moving out of Pretoria? It's a good thing, but we really have to cover other areas. We've been in Pretoria ever since you started this thing. When are you moving out of Pretoria and to other towns? On page 64, I mean slide, whether it's slide 64 is, I'm not sure. Let me try to reach there. Yeah, I'll get it. I just wonder, yeah, okay, I'm there. You talk about replacing existing security fence with new concrete security wall. You talk about complete repair and renovation of complex. You talk about service contact for maintenance of security system and various units. This one negatively. But the two, we should be specific to say where. So that when we have to do oversight, we can really think you are doing this as specific. Because it's not specific, it's just a security wall. And I'm not even sure what complex are we talking about there. With the malls or what? Infrastructure. Somewhere I've read that the infrastructure budget has decreased because of we didn't spend the money. And I'm not sure why are we not spending money. Is it due to incapacity or what? I mean, when we talk about infrastructure, that is where employment is created. Now we are decreasing the money for infrastructure. In other words, we are not creating jobs. Why do we want jobs? So somewhere, somehow, things are not all right. We cannot say we are creating top. On the other side, we decrease money for infrastructure. And infrastructure is one of the priorities that government is looking at. Thank you, Chair.
There are two members who have not spoken, Honorable Dafta and Honorable Sonti. If you are not yet ready to take a comment or make a comment either or ask a question, I'll revert to Honorable Adams, who wanted to add to earlier engagement. kindly do for me.
Thank you, Chairperson. This question is on the inner city projects. How do you go about to identify projects? And can the projects be simultaneous, for example, in Johannesburg and say Bloemfontein? The other one is on slide 35, Chairperson. The DG said there are reductions, the deductions of the budget for infrastructure as a result of continual underspending. Now what do you attribute the underspending? And secondly, what are you doing to overcome that there isn't underspending? For infrastructure is very important in the creation of jobs. And the other thing, Chairperson, are skills developed through the EPW programs? Do you have a record or an assessment that skills are transferred through the EPW program? And Chairperson, I'd like the department to give us also a breakdown, especially in the construction. How they engage through the entities women, youth, and the disabled. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. No, let me do this. I see all members are keen with follow-ups. You can't follow up on your own questions without any head and hand. What I'd like to do right now, let's give the department, the ministry, a chance for a rejoinder. And thereafter, we can have follow-up questions. Thank you.
Let me take it at a fairly high level, and the colleague from the department will answer some of the more specific issues. The honourable member shouldn't be laughing, but she's understood what I'm trying to say. Specifically, I'd like to talk about the Expanded Public Works Program, but before I do that, let me just also ask the question about the, I think it was from the Honourable Mubu, who asked the question about the IDP and the current status. Is it just hanging in air? Why are we talking about developing a business case and new legislation possibly for the IDT? IDT, Independent Development Trust, okay. I'm not guilty of, yeah. I'm really guilty, but let me try to avoid guilty of using acronyms. Basically, the Independent Development Trust, the IDT, was established in its last gasp years by the apartheid regime as a trust. So it allocated, I get the exact sum, 2 billion, which it put into a trust. And basically it was an attempt to create a black buffer cloth, okay? The Urban Foundation personalities were, and colleagues who were around and in the struggle at those times will know. So it was an apartheid regime that was trying with the prospect of a democracy, a non-racial democracy arriving, was trying to establish allies through some kind of development, creative, and middle class black grouping, and the IDT had that sort of mission. Okay. So it had a trust, and it was called Independent, and the third letter in the acronym Development was the apartheid regime's version of development might not mean. But it continues to exist, the IDT, and continues to do some very important and useful work, particularly in project and program managing around construction of social infrastructure, schools, clinics, and so on. So it's been used quite widely in lots of provinces and also by the National Department in that area in particular. And its particular strength, we believe, is also that, unlike your typical program, private sector program and project managers, is that it has developed, and we're encouraging it to develop further, a much more developmental approach, consulting communities. Don't just build the clinic or the school without, first of all, ensuring that there is local development in a variety of ways. Consult the community, build local skills, build the ability to maintain the what is constructed and so forth. So the reason for a major review, because basically the trust is in trouble financially, because there is no trust. That 2 billion has long gone, okay, has been spent. So it's surviving on allocations from Treasury to regularly through the department, but it's really not sufficient for it to do what it is doing and what we expect it to do. So that's the current situation. So it's not a drift. There is legislation covering it, but essentially what we're saying is it shouldn't be independent. It's an important public entity for doing important public interest and public purpose things. It no longer trusts. The T in IDE is irrelevant. We like the E. It needs to be developmental and progressive. There needs to be a significant, and so we're busy now with developing a business case, working closely with Treasury in particular, and we hope to bring that to the portfolio committee in the coming months, so that you also have a sense of what we're trying to do in terms of this policy development. If I could then move quickly to the expanded public works program, a lot of questions. I won't answer the deeper questions around the rise and fall of allocations and underspending and so forth, and DDG Henderson, who is the DDG in charge of that branch of the department, will speak. But let me try to answer it in more general terms. First of all, the expanded public works programs, in which also we include the community work program, are not all run by the Department of Public Works. Okay, so there are about 8 national line departments. There are, and 2 or 3 of them are lead departments in their own sectors in terms of expanded public employment programs. So social development is playing a really important role in terms of public employment programs dealing with home-based care and so forth. COPLA, the Department of Corporate Development in particular, is the lead department for the community work program. Okay, which is a slightly different approach to a public employment program. Our department is the lead department for the infrastructure sector in terms of the public employment programs. And then there are dozens of others. All provinces are involved in it, and all municipalities now, unevenly, of course, this is real life, but municipalities are also, all of them in our country are involved and are under pressure from all of us to ensure that they're also doing public employment programs. Okay, so Chairperson, we'd like sometime to do a fuller briefing on all of this. A cabinet decision of November last year decided that what we need to do is to coordinate better these expanded public works programs, because South Africa is a pioneer in many respects in the public employment programs. We've got a delegation, I think, coming from Vietnam soon to come and look at what we're doing. Spanish are interested in what we're doing. The International Labour Organization, uses us to promote the kinds of things that we're doing and so on. But we're not sufficiently branding what we're doing. Of course, it's all over across lots of different departments, and that's a strength, but it also adds to the complexity. So the decision, as I say, from Cabinet in November last year, which we are in the process of beginning to implement now, that this should get presidential public employment coordinating commission, a little bit like the presidential infrastructure coordinating commission, of course not on such a grand scale in terms of the nature of the project, to brand better and so on. Many of the questions, some of which have been a bit critical, are, I think, correct and not wrong. So we mustn't lose sight of the amazing things that are being done. One new development that I forgot to mention was environment. Working for water, working on fire, working on coastline, whole range of projects, contributing billions of rand actually of saving to GDP through working for water and so forth. But they're particular, yes, when you travel through the country, you will find, and we hope that the portfolio committee will help us also to find instances where people are just parked under trees in these orange overall, but not really creating assets or delivering services to communities, and so on. We're now approaching, we've had two phases of the expanded public works program. The first began in 2004 for 5 years, the second in 2009, which ended in end of March this year, and now we're into phase three, where the target is 6 million work opportunities. In the last 5 years, we achieved a target of slightly over 4 million work opportunities. So we're convinced that we can achieve a target of 6 million work opportunities. We think it's if we get our act together and coordinate better and are smart in what we're doing. But we take the fact the danger of hitting work opportunity targets is that you get into the situation of just counting heads, pushing people through, giving them 40 days of so-called work experience, and you tick that off and you say another 20 people have had a work opportunity. So what we're saying and what the Cabinet decision of November has said is that in particular this department will constitute the secretariat for the overall public employment program, the technical secretariat, and therefore a lot of weight will fall onto DDG Henderson and his program, and therefore a lot of work onto this portfolio committee to make sure. And one of the key issues that we wanted to do is to make sure that we are not just getting heads, but we are monitoring and evaluating much more effectively what services have been provided, what assets have been created, a school has been built, a footbridge has been constructed or whatever, or infrastructure has been maintained. It's something that we often forget to do as a country in general. And maintenance is ideal for expanded public works program and for labor intensity, and it's localized, and the work doesn't come to an end because the construction has been completed. The very last point, sorry, we're getting on expand public works programs, I can go on forever, but the very last point, the point about what do we mean by decent work, I think that's a very good question. Basically, there's an International Labour Organization, ILO, a UN entity, which has defined decent work, and the trade union movement in South Africa, I think, uses that particular definition. We see these public employment programs as not being outside of a decent work agenda, but part and parcel of ensuring that the millions of unemployed South Africans, including Maki's young people in South Africa who are unemployed, that these public employment programs offer decent work and contribute to the to transforming the workplace so that there is decent work. So what does decent work involve? Well, it involves basically the right to organize. So that is not denied to participants in these programs. They can unionize. And they have the right to the constitutional right, and we see this part of a decent work agenda. But there needs to be fair and equitable compensation, and that's why, although we use the word stipend, I don't have to use the word stipend. These participants, there's a minimum wage declaration. It's currently 71 rand a day. That's not a lot, but it's better than people are getting paid in a lot of private sector jobs, including, by the way, the agricultural workers, the farm workers, which one party I won't mention, objected to the minimum wage be lifted in the Western Cape, well, naturally, but as a result of the objected. But at the time, that minimum wage was actually lower than what the so-called stipend, the minimum wage and public employment program. So that's a minimum floor, but many of the programs pay more than that, and it's obviously a question of getting maximizing the spread of the stipend on the one hand versus making sure that people are reasonably compensated as best as possible. And then funny skills transfer. And that's something also we say we need to monitor, you know, what is the consequence? Has a community been changed? Is there better community cohesion and a sense of ownership of the aspect of services provided as a result of these programs? What's created, what's produced, but also what happened to the participants. The other assumption was they have 60 days of work experience and then, hallelujah, they graduate into formal employment. And that sometimes happens, but it doesn't necessarily happen. So we need to make sure that there's appropriate skilling and training and proper monitoring and evaluating of what happens to the participants. So I'm going a bit long because we really need the portfolio committee to assist us to do effective monitoring and evaluation so that we really not just achieve a 6 million work opportunity target, but it makes a serious impact on poor communities and on our country. So thanks, Chair, for the opportunity to speak at length on the expanded public works program.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Director General, the other aspects allocate who answers what. Let's move quick, folks.
I'm going to ask and then I will deal with the last questions that I will have to deal with. Mr. Mabuda, to deal with the issue of the war graves questions. And this Manda. Yeah.
Thanks very much, DG, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The our contribution to the war graves is informed by the establishment and the existence of a commission that is called the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, which is based in the UK. This commission was established with the sole purpose of maintaining all the graves which are scattered all over the world, Europe, Africa, in support of those people who passed on as a result of the World War. It was a Commonwealth agreement that involved all the countries that were part and parcel of the Commonwealth. We are making financial contribution on annual basis. Some of the countries that are involved in terms of making financial contribution includes, of course, the United Kingdom, Canada, South Africa, New Zealand, and India. And as I've indicated, that the main purpose of this contribution is the maintenance of all those graves after the Second World War, and it is governed by the Agreement of Commonwealth under the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, which is UK based. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Mr. Chapasco to deal with the issue of the accessibility and perhaps register.
Thank you very much, DG, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. In relation to the accessibility program run by the department, it's worth noting that the asset register currently indicates 107,000 improvements that have been built over a long, long period of time. In terms of our standards today, certainly the National Building Regulation, amongst other issues, requires that all new infrastructure be completely accessible and friendly. In relation to the backlog, it's worth sharing with the committee that around 1999, a very extensive survey was done to ensure a program to convey to convert all our buildings to be accessible. However, the budget at the time to do this across the spectrum of 107,000 buildings was absolutely prohibitive. So based on the finances that are available on the department's capital budget, we currently run a program on an annual basis to incrementally improve 100 buildings a year, just with a targeted program for their accessibility requirements. Any new buildings that are built are completely accessible. In relation to the immovable asset register, we're currently running a very robust program over 3 years, as was communicated to Parliament in the previous financial year, and our target date for the complete asset register is the 31st of March 2016. The implementation plan to get there sets milestones along the way. Quite a lot of projects that make up the asset register program, but our deadline is the 31st of March 2016, and we are on track with that. As the Minister reported this morning, we are around 95% complete with the verification of assets in relation to deeds, registry, reconciliations, and so on. Thank you.
Just to amend that, the deliverables per annum with regard to the assets register, and that is driven by two areas, the requirements of the auditing, as well as the compliance with standards, and the qualitative aspects of the information that is to be there. The first target of 2013 was completeness of registered properties, progress on and of properties, registered properties. That has been achieved. That's the base on which we think, from a completeness perspective, the Auditor General isn't going to give us problems with regard to the audit outcomes. And then for next year, we will then, because our property now are located within the property management trading entity, its standards reporting is full wrap. We then are going to deal with the issue of valuation and all of those things regarding each of those assets. Why you then continue to do, to a large extent, to do actually condition assessments and start to look at the values against evaluation methodology, which at the moment we've adopted to be fairly defined as municipal valuation for the properties, unless we have a specific cost for each of the assets that will be there. And then in 2016 is to have fully compliant asset register in all of those respects. So we have those tariffs fair and unbound in that regard. The tariffs are tied to the member so that it becomes clear it's not a very broad detail specific issue, but later.
Then the next, before you go to the next one, let me just augment on what you have said. In 1994, I was also a member of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. And speaking to the issue of the assets register, the challenge then was to obviously compile a register of what had been, according to apartheid, Republic of South Africa. And then you also had all your homeless. And over and above the homeless, you also had properties in foreign countries. And I recall for the first 5 years, there was no asset register that was inherited from the previous regime. So I'd also like to know, have we been able to trace those properties in homelands? Have we been able to have some form of reconciliation in terms of the national assets register, but also the properties in foreign countries?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair, we are doing this exercise in conjunction with all of the Rondes, one custodian. We reconcile between ourselves and the deed register. We reconcile with ourselves with the exercises that are taking place in each of the other custodian departments and the provinces. We run a task team every, is it quarterly? That continues to, that's why how we were able to get to where we are. However, throughout this, I think you will have picked it up in the first 5 years. The databases that were made were not very accurate, depending on which one was better accurate than the other. And secondly, there may have been activities that took place between 1990 and 1994 that may have resulted in arrangements around properties, with properties moving without an explanation. Those issues are part of the program that we are going to implement immediately, because now we are going to be looking at those properties that we cannot find a plausible reason for their transfer, which you can see they may have been properties of government at one point, but they now belong to a private sector person. Where transactions are clear and clean, we fix them, but where those transactions are not there, then we're going to campaign for, which is called PILAC, for people to volunteer before they found about the assets that they may have taken. And it applies both in assets in the homeland as well as in the former Republic of South Africa.
Thank you, DJ.
We moved it from bring back to take back.
Yes.
Bring back doesn't work.
DJ, for a moment I thought you were also a pastor. You were speaking in parables like a priest on Sunday. But we understand what you're trying to say. There are also challenges, obviously, the apartheid regime, in order to duck sanctions, was able to acquire lots of properties abroad without having to record, using exactly that sanctions passing umbrella. So it does raise many challenges, but we're just highlighting that issue. We may continue.
Thank you. Chair, may I also invite the entities to contribute in some of the areas of specific time? There is an issue of that relates to the collision. Government itself, in the entirety, including other departments outside of public works, have set a structure to deal with the issue of responding to the collision issue. To be specific to the question that has been asked then, are we collaborating and collaborating with the competitions committee? Yes, we have. we've had several discussions throughout this development. We've met with the Competitions Commission, which included what is it that we need to do to try to prevent this from continuing in the future, what training arrangements, what internal control mechanisms do we put in place. But I think I will ask the chair of CIDD and the CEO to just elaborate on the, because that's where this sector is regulated, on the people who are members of that, who are in the register of developers and contractors, to actually indicate the measures that are being taken into account in that area. I did mention in the presentation that in looking at legislation, there are a lot of things that we have discovered as a result of that collision thing that needs to be fixed within the legislation, so that what can be done by CIDB and government to those entities can bite. They can probably just elaborate if with your permission, Chair.
The chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG and members. I will give a broad overview, and then the CEO will provide some details on issues that I don't elaborate on. But since the process started with the Competition Commission, the CIDB awaited then that process to be concluded and for consent agreements to be finalized with the 15 companies that had entered into the fast-track process with the Competition Commission. And of those 15 companies, or outside those 15 companies, three have not yet completed that process. But then there's an additional 22 companies that are still also being or in negotiation and in discussion with the Competition Commission. Now, we have then consulted the Department of Public Works as well and reported on our progress as the process from the Construction Industry Development Board side unfolded. And we have also obtained then guidance and also advice from the department on how to proceed, especially even on some of the tricky issues that we may not have looked at a broader level. We then are conducting then our legal process in line with the CID regulations, those are the Construction Industry Development regulations. And we have appointed the investigating officers, and they have then submitted the post issue letters to all those 15 companies that had concluded the consent agreements with the Competition Commission. We also obtained data, extensive information from the Competition Commission, because we have agreed that as government agencies we need to cooperate on this process so that we don't replicate what the Competition Commission has already done or reinvent the wheel. And also because as the CIDB we have limited resources, so it works for us that we cooperate with the Competition Commission and other agencies of the state where relevant. So now the investigating officer has submitted 15 reports or 13 of the 15 letters that we issued, because we issued then after those initial reports, we issued the letters to the companies that were affected to say they have contravened the CIDB's code of conduct. So the companies have responded, and Chairman and Chairperson and members, this is really going to be a very interesting and detailed process and a long haul, because where, for example, the investigating officer would issue a letter to say these are the contraventions of the CID regulations, they would submit bulk reports, through their attorneys and respond to their chairpersons of the boards, through, their CEOs. So we were warned already, at least by the department, that we should be ready for that process and prepare for that, because this is, in terms of the CID regulation, our punitive measures can even go up to having the companies blacklisted and not participating in any of the government's contracts for about 10 years. So now we have submitted then those details to our legal advisors, who are going through the process so that they can
submit a report that will advise the board on how to move forward on this process. The board will be sitting then at its first meeting after its election on the 31st of July, and we deliberate on these issues, and we shall also be reporting to the Department of Public Works on that issue. But then to conclude at a high level also, Chairperson and members, we are taking this matter of collusion as the CIDB very seriously. We have been advised and in discussions with the department, the minister, the deputy minister, and various other senior officials that we are going to be following our code of conduct and the CIDB regulations to the letter, and will ensure that punitive measures will be implemented relevant or relative to the extent of infringement of the code of conduct. But also we will look then at what is happening, as the DG already mentioned, that we are going to be informed also by the outcome of this process on how we need to review our act and what integrative instrument as the CIDB we need to be looking at developing to ensure that we avert any recurrence of this, or at least we do have early warning systems. But also to touch on something that the Honourable Member Phil Tan also mentioned, we will use this process as well to intensify CIDB's own efforts to develop contractors, small and medium-sized contractors, and especially African contractors, to ensure that in conjunction with the departments and various other client departments, municipalities and provinces, at all scales of governance, we can look at how then we can, you know, in cooperation, look at developing contractors through their budget and averting, you know, into collusion and corruption in the industry. Thank you. I'll then, Chairperson, ask the CEO to also add and expatiate on any other details that I may have left out. Thank you.
Thank you, madam.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think from the questions that came from the floor, there is concern that CIDB might take the approach of the Competition Commission, which I think many see as a slap in the wrist in terms of the approach. And I must point out, as the Chairperson has said, and emphasize that we have our own code of conduct, and we have a set of sanctions that we're looking at. And they vary from fines to notices, suspension from 1 year to 10 years, as well as registration. And we're looking at all of them. We're not putting anything to the side in terms of our own action as the CIDB. We are obtaining legal advice currently in terms of the impact and how the sanctions could be applied in terms of our regulation. Over and above, Chair, I think there has been also concern registered around transformation of the industry. And we see this as some kind of way that enables us or creates an environment at which the contractors found themselves, particularly the large ones, at the back foot. And therefore, as CIDB, we are at a strategic level going to use this as a vehicle to push the agenda of transformation of the construction industry. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. CFO will handle.
Thanks,
Honourable Chair and members. The allocation to the parliamentary village of 8.6 in this current year, 9 million in the year that follows is for purposes of subsidizing the transportation that carries the members from the villages to parliament and back. So it's purely just for transportation and buses that you are operating. And then maybe I could just as well answer the issue around the question was asked on slide 37, that there's a duplication in terms of the expanded public works program to create a grant for municipalities to duplication. The second one is the 348 in 1415 and 1416. Related to provinces, so that is a genuine mistake that was made in terms of repeating those same descriptions.
Thank you. a question on the parliamentary. That might have been, there was another question about parliamentary village board and the allocation to it. I think there was a question about that. So basically, there, in terms of legislation, in terms of allocation, there is a parliamentary villages board, management board, which is made up of parliamentarians. In fact, the Honourable Adams was on the previous board. I don't know if he will be on the current board. One of the problems that we had as a department was that there was, and Honourable Adams will confirm this, that there was very poor attendance by the representatives from the various villages, parliamentary villages. And, you know, we see that as an important vehicle. I mean, it's a statutory requirement. But secondly, it's where the kinds of frustrations that members have, and we know they have many, many frustrations around fridges and things like, you know, the thing that you mentioned personally. So we like to use the opportunity to say that's what that allocation is about. It's a small allocation, but to enable the convening and regular meeting of the parliamentary religious board, that we would really appeal to members to ensure that they're properly and timely represented, so that the issues and frustrations that inevitably arise in these accommodation issues are addressed, and so as a department we can respond effectively. Thank you.
Thank you, James. With regard to the issue about our program for inner city and small towns over television, I think we have moved in terms of policy and approach. We have moved outside of limiting our intervention around the matter to city of Tshwane. I think what was critical was to define a set of principles and a program that is based on policy that seeks to contribute to ensure that the investments that government make in infrastructure for government to deliver its services is utilized appropriately. You will see that there is a concept that is beginning to spread around government precincts, and we are promoting that kind of approach, which includes our own contributions for solving the accommodation requirements of the various partners that are providing services like Home Affairs, Justice and Courts, etc. To build on the principle that the provision of accommodation should be such that it creates efficiencies for the poor people who are being served to not spend lots of money trying to get the services. I mean, at the moment, which is largely driven by the fact that we have not developed our own properties in some of the areas, you would find a court on the southern side of a city, and then the police station on the northern side of the town, and then the Home Affairs service on the other side of the city. So if somebody is going to Home Affairs, to require a document, then they are told to bring a certified document. They then have to catch a taxi and go to a police to certify the document, and then etc. We are looking at that outside of that to actually say, when we develop this precinct, even with the provincial services department, it will then collaborate and make sure that we have those precincts that can then ensure that people get services in one area, but within the IDP. The IDPs of those local municipalities. The pilot, because some of those IDPs are very, very scanty with regard to the actual content of the work. So we're not limiting ourselves to Swan. But it is critical that we complete the project of Call Swan appropriately. It may be reviewed, I think, in discussions at Cabinet, the way whether or not we shouldn't use that kind of approach to change the outlook of the cities from abutting cities to ones that present the modern requirements of our society.
DG, thank you. Your example in the presentation, the fulcrum has been Tshwane, and you have said that you have not limited your endeavors to Tshwane.
Yeah.
But you have not said where else you have gone. You are silent then.
No, I'm going to ask the DG to just indicate the city that we are working on already.
Thank you, DG, Honourable Chair.
The provinces that we basically prioritize over the MTEC is Polokwane, Mthatha, Mabatu, Durban, Cape Town, Johannesburg. We've currently started in Polokwane.
When you started your engagement, you spoke about provinces. Those are towns.
In Polokwane itself, we've got a site that we've identified for 32,000 square meters of development that then will consolidate national government leases as well as our own regional office requirements. We're also engaging with the province and municipality, so like the DG indicated, we could have integrated service delivery to our people. In Mthatha itself, we've identified a piece of land that we are now working with that's in Eastern Cape. We're working with the Cayman community there to develop a precinct, a government precinct in Mthatha as well. We're also working in the other areas, but we've just started the program, so there's limited progress in there. We've narrowed down sites, and we can provide progress as we go along. Thank you.
Thank you. A little more clarity, I must say. In Sizulu, they say, I'll find no class. It's unlike sitting.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the DDG if it has looked to deal with the technical aspects that that were asked with regard to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a question raised about the discrepancy in terms of Northwest performance regarding the incentive grant and then the increase in subsequent year. There are two key concepts here that I'd like to emphasize. And one is the question of we measure EPLP according to different indicators, but there's one key one that we call full-time equivalence. The full-time equivalence gives you a common measure to say, like for instance, not all work opportunities are the same duration, but if we take the person who is for work and we convert them to full-time equivalence, we get a measure, and that's one of the key criteria for the allocation of incentive grants. In the case of Northwest, you have seen on the previous slide, 67, they have, in terms of the incentive spent, that was relatively low, but in terms of what they have reported for the full-time equivalence, that measurement was used to say, yes, they have the potential to create more work opportunities in the subsequent year, and also more municipalities will be reporting. And we said, we don't want to sound confusing, we are prepared to put in writing the criteria used and how the application came to be. That was in a similar increase of the previous one. So that's not a mistake, it's actually based on criteria agreed with the National Treasury. Then there was a question asked, Chair, so which means there was a question asked about how grants, the incentive grants are allocated in general. Two main criteria would be the previous year's performance, which means we collect data, and we analyze the data for the performance prior to the DORA, or the Division of Revenue Act allocations. That's the first one, and then that is based on the full-time equivalence that we use to calculate the actual amount of the National Treasury we calculate those amounts that will be published in the Division of Revenue Act. So it's not a per capita one, as one of the members asked, but it's based on full-time equivalence, which is an equivalent measure used to calculate these allocations. There was also a question with regard to Skills Development Index and Public Works Program, and we do access funds from the Department of Higher Education and Training, that is the National Skills Fund. And based on these, we have numerous EPLRD participants that have received training in artisan development programs, such as electricians, boilermakers, diesel mechanics, etc. And then we obviously have a national youth service component where more than 27,500 youth have been trained. And we would be the first to really say that the training was not, perhaps not nearly enough, but these are, we have documentary evidence to the training that, has taken place in the Expand Public Works Program, and it's basically our move is towards meeting to long courses and be looking at the quality of education rather than saying each and every participant will be exposed to training, but we have with the clear statement this amount of money, this is the vis-a-vis results that we can provide you with, and I've got all the, we've got all the details. Thank you, Chair.
Right, and Keith? Thank you, Chair. I the last issue, unless I'm reminded about anything I may have missed. I think, let me admit that in the past 3 years, our performance on infrastructure has not been what it should be. We've had factors internal to the department as well as factors of external to the department that are causing that. The internal efficiencies are part of our turnaround because we look at the whole infrastructure development infrastructure development management system, and we're changing that and remodeling it such that it creates the efficiencies. That affects even the structure. Where you would not have a line of sight on a project that is being implemented in Mthatha, because it is controlled through a regional arrangement. The project, the PPG responsible for projects, could not be held responsible and accountable for the non-performance there, because the person is not, those people who are project managers at a local, at a project level are not reporting to him directly. We've changed some of those issues and created the right arrangements so that you can then make sure that your performance criteria is set correctly at the top, so that then you are able to effect the implementation of those projects and account and hold people accountable. That's one part. The second part is the issue that we've acknowledged around skills. Even the project managers we've had, some of them are really challenged with regard to even the content of the project management activity. It's both in some cases the inappropriate skills for the person to do the job, and in other cases too many projects per project manager, to a point where it becomes almost difficult to actually keep projects on their radar, and therefore pick up issues of non-performance too late. External factors is performance of the contractors. Some of the contractors have really underperformed, caused us major problems. We've had to put some of the project contractors on mora, and we've had to go to legal processes. At times they even prevent the department from cancelling contracts. They go to court and get either deeds, and sometimes those either deeds cause the project to stall for a long time until that legal problem has been uncovered. I think those are the factors. One of the things we've done is, at the moment we're clear about keeping them on the hands of the contracts. And secondly, we have to proactive and deal with the issues at court. If they run to court, we nearly experienced a similar problem when we're implementing the inauguration recently, where parties suddenly ran to court to get an interdict. And we were there this time around with them and made our case. But the court could not give grant by the verdict because it was in public interest that the inauguration takes place on that day and it's not going to be changed. Those kinds of things. We were less slack on following those things, but things are improving. We hope that we will, going forward, our project spending is going to be improved. We have also, within the department, we are having monthly engagements on projects. where everyone of but people of the participants in the development of the projects, in the implementation of the projects, may come and account for what they've done against their milestones and therefore held accountable. We take action quickly when we discover that there are blockages that are taking place. We'll see at the end of 2014-15 how much we have made progress with regard to that. During the year, we will probably account.
No, DJ. We're not going to wait till the end of 2014-2015 to see how we are doing.
Yes, of course.
There's an issue that I'd like to cover with you, see. Uh-huh. Let's cut the pelvis. When you started off, you started saying that there's an issue about our performance has not been what it should be. We either succeed in carrying out our objectives or we fail. And then we have to ask ourselves why we failed. The second material point that you make, which I would like to take issue with, you see, it can't be correct. We say that we have appointed project managers, but those project managers lack the requisite skills. How do you appoint people in the first place without the relevant skills? And it becomes your baby, it becomes your responsibility to train them and assist them to get the required skills that you need, that you are paying them to execute a particular function. Doesn't make sense. So that we can't blame on somebody else. We are the people who contract people to carry out certain functions. Then the issue is we are remiss. So then we need to tighten our belt. We can't farm out that responsibility to somebody and then sound as a victim. We go to court there. It's your responsibility to go to court. It's not as if there's something wonderful that you are doing. If there's a matter that appears at court and we have to represent the department, that of course you have to rebut if we are in the right to be there, you see. So I'm merely saying that. Let's not fudge certain issues. Let's deal with them head on. If I'm responsible for failure, I should take the responsibility to do so and to correct that. But let's cut the parables. Where we failed, we failed. What are we doing to correct those failures? Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chair. You're absolutely right. There's one hanging question, which was the Baltimore Leocorp thing, which Honourable Adams addressed. But maybe if I could also just leave the opportunity of what you said, and you were speaking in parables, and you're absolutely right. Because I think probably in the first session, given that we're in a rush with the danger is that we lose sight of the wood for the lemon trees and acronyms and things like that. So I thought maybe if, just very briefly to say what from the ministerial side we would like to highlight to the powerful thing. What we want to really highlight as the sort of takeaway issues. Not to obliterate the many problems and challenges that we've got in the department. And I'm a bit inspired by what you're saying. I think the first big issue that's underway, and this portfolio committee is going to play a really important role, I think, in assisting us and contributing to the discussion, is the establishment of the property management training entity. And it's directly related to the issues you've just been raising, Chairperson. You know, I think across government, and not least in this department, but in some of the other departments in which I've served as well. Basically, in the mid-90s and late-90s, there was a massive de-skilling of the public sector for all kinds of, we can go into ideological reasons, let me park those to one side. And so what we've got in a case, so what are the big things that this department is the largest building property owner in South Africa. It's 7 times larger than the next biggest one, which is growth into private sector property management. So it's a massive, massive, massive portfolio. That's about leasing in, leasing out buildings. It's about being the landlord of publicly owned buildings on behalf of a whole range of clients, so-called client departments, the public sector in general. Now, because of a massive downskill of many departments, including this one, when we lease from from the private sector, for instance. We've got colleagues who are not necessarily corrupt. Okay, there may or may not be. There is corruption in the problem we're dealing with. But who don't have the... They encounter some lawyer, property lawyer, being flown out from London, a CEO from some fancy head office in Tanzania, and we've got a chief director who may well be honest and someone who's trying to do their best. And we just get outflanked. So a lot of the problems that we've encountered in corruption is really corporate manipulation of our responsibilities. And so that's why that's the core component of the turnaround is to establish as a government component, not as an agency or entity outside of the department, but as a specific ring-fenced government component called the Property Management Trading Entity. Okay. It's there in legislation and policy, but it's never been given proper body. Now, what a government component enables us to do is to move, is not to be trapped within the public sector regulations, which are often professional light and very heavy in terms of management and generic management and clerical and administrative staff. You need that in a home affairs part, where there are routine tasks that are occurring. Here, we need a serious professional capacity. And so what we're going to do with this property management trading entity, which we've talked about a lot in this report, is to enable us to hire in and develop serious skills and to ring-fence that entity that's looking after this massive, massive property portfolio. But we're doing so in amateurish ways. And it's not the fault of the colleagues involved in that. It requires a significant... So that's the big highlight issue that I think that we're reporting to you in terms of turnaround. There are matters as well. Obviously, the construction sector, infrastructure sector is another big challenge, and the expanded public works and policy. Let me then just take you through something, Paul, is just a specific response to the Lukov and Polsmore prison. Those who are not Cape Town residents might not have seen a front page on the article, I think it was last week or a week and a half ago, yes, which said Polsmore up for sale, basically. Okay, now, those who are not Cape Townians or don't know Cape Town, the Polsmore prison, which is a very extensive property, is located in a very valuable area. And there are lots of very hungry property developers who would love to create, suburbs, small suburbs for the wealthy, and so forth. And so the Cape Argus headline created quite a lot of concern. I know that the Honourable Ed comes from a particular area, constituency, very close to Baltimore. A lot of concern from the community that a public asset is going to be sold off or disposed of in some way, and the community won't be consulted. The community issues around housing and development and transformation and the deracialization of the city of Cape Town will just be negative. So, and critically to be concerned. So the explanation for this is the minister, mostly was asked a parliamentary question, is there any discussion, I think the exact question is something like, is there any intention to dispose of the Polsmore prison property and Leocourt property? And because ministers must answer truthfully, the answer was basically yes. Okay. That there are preliminary studies to...
The gist of it has been discovered.
Has the project been approached to consider it? And the answer was yes, because that was an honest answer. We are not, for the moment, actively pursuing this at all. We have a very clear policy on the disposal of properties, which is that a clear case needs to be made out. Alternative arrangements, if there are, need to be made out for what would happen to a very populous prison in Polsmore. And what the intention is for the future of such property. And clearly, we would look to, there would need to be a developmental, and it would need to link to an integrated development approach, deracialization, effective developmental urbanization, and so forth of the city. Otherwise, we would not do. But just to reassure those in the immediate vicinity, but also South Africans in general, that the honest answer was yes, we've been approached.
approached. But we are not happy until a much better case and reasons for it are presented to us. We certainly won't pursue this matter. So just to reassure. And I'm sorry that the media are not here because although the journalist wasn't from the Argus, we were present. But I think it's important to get that message across because I know it's caused a lot of uncertainty.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know your hand is up. According to our program, we should have adjourned for lunch at 1 o'clock. The cheapest watch in the room says it's 30 minutes past 1. I would like to suggest that we do take the lunch break and ensure that we are back by 2 o'clock. I'm told that the best we could do is a so-called finger lunch outside the store. Hopefully it's still there. Meeting adjourned until 2 o'clock. There are many passers by, and they pass by hungry.